When it comes to commercial banking, relationships matter. At Associated Bank, we've got you. With a dedicated team of relationship managers helping you secure financing to best serve you today and tomorrow. Visit associatedbank.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
We're on with David Fowler, the Senior Vice President of Capital Markets at Associated Bank. Welcome back.
Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Doing great, thank you. You're our Brexit expert, and of course, whenever we have you on, we like to ask you about the latest Brexit developments. And I want to start today by, if you could give us sort of a pulse check on the current state of how things are going, not only in the EU, but in Britain with the struggle. I saw one story, I believe it was The Guardian, that said, started out by saying, the shelves are empty, yet levers no longer triumphant can usually blame the problems on the EU. So there's a lot of blame on the EU still, isn't there?
Well, I think that's the default, you know, approach anyway, right? So, you know, I think the UK government is finding it a little difficult to make reality kind of fit the promise. And as a result, it's always good to blame someone else. You know, I think there are issues. You know, as we've talked about before, a lot of this, I think a lot of the, certainly the supply side issues, I think a lot of them are frankly COVID related as well. So in one way, the Conservative government in the UK has kind of got lucky in that they have, you know, there's something else that they can blame rather than just Brexit. But there are still issues that, you know, as your listeners probably may remember, you know, when we were talking back in May, you know, the sausage war, the battle of the banger, or however you want to phrase the issue with fresh meat exports from mainland UK, so from Britain to Northern Ireland, was, you know, at the forefront. And, you know, there were articles everywhere in the British papers talking about how, you know, Northern Ireland people would be deprived of their British banger for breakfast. You know, that was sorted out by an extension till the end of September. But that's, you know, we're now, you know, early September, nothing has changed, and it's unlikely that the European Union will just continue to grant these kind of 3-month extensions. So I think there will be some issues until eventually some kind of resolution to this kind of phytosanitary side is, you know, is found, and whether that's the UK eventually just adopting EU regulatory standards or something else, time will tell. But you know, the EU has offered to allow the UK to sign up for, you know, EU standards, which is basically what the current situation in the UK anyway. They've declined to do so far. Maybe that'll change.
Yeah, and I guess the hope is that some of that stuff might be able to be resolved. But the Guardian story, there's a great line in the story that says that immovable facts of geography and economics are making Britain's reliance on the rest of Europe impossible to ignore. That makes it sound like some of these problems will never be worked out.
I think that's, you know, it may be a little bit of hyperbole, but there's certainly a grain of truth in it. And, you know, when you put up trade barriers, and you put up barriers to trade, trade gets diverted or curtailed. And, you know, that's what we're seeing. And, you know, what we've seen, if we take kind of like the Northern Ireland situation, you know, we've seen a massive change in trade flows. So trade between Northern Ireland and the Republic, so intra-island trade, has gone up 50% since January. But trade between Northern Ireland and mainland Britain is down. Trade between Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, and Britain is down again because just it's more difficult. Trade has becomes more difficult. People find different ways, and whether it's, you know, product substitution, changes in taste, or, you know, some type of relocative activity, you know, trade diversion tends to have an impact on the country that is causing that diversion to occur, in this case, Britain. The other thing I think it's good to remember, and this kind of was alluded to, I think, in that article as well, is that we've only seen the first shoe drop. So if they're worried about empty shelves now, the second shoe is going to come towards the end of this year and early next year, when Britain is supposed to bring in its trade controls for products going from the EU into the UK. So as of now, Britain has deferred those until next year, which means that trade is actually relatively easy going from EU into the UK. The EU obviously hasn't done that, so trade from UK to EU is quite difficult. So, you know, given all the problems we have, this is actually the easiest it's likely to be. And I think that may be concerning for people.
Is it any indication of how serious the potential problems are down the road that you have the, you mentioned Northern Ireland, you have the Prime Minister of Ireland meeting personally with the President of France on this. The high-level talks and negotiations are underway on this. Is that any indication of how serious all of this is?
Well, it's very serious for the Republic. So, you know, because Britain was our largest trading partner before we joined the European Union, before there was a European Union. And certainly while we were in the European Union, the UK still accounted for about half of Ireland's exports. It's likely that that amount, that number will decline, you know, certainly maybe to 35%, maybe to 30%. So there is a, you know, there is a concern about trade diversion and how it's going to impact on the Irish economy. But I think the other thing to remember is that Ireland historically has a very close relationship with France. So we've had it since the 1600s. So for the Irish Prime Minister, called Taoiseach, to meet with the President of France is not that unusual. And relations between France and Ireland historically and currently are always very good.
I think one of the big questions I have on any of this is if the problems persist, and you mentioned that the grace periods keep being extended, you know, indefinitely, I guess, is there going to be a political price to pay for the levers on this?
I think there may be. The real problem is going to, the real problem, I think, is really going to happen in Northern Ireland. And I think that's going to be the area where the rubber does hit the road. You know, Northern Ireland's kind of in a very unusual situation, and it may be for your listeners, this analogy might be kind of helpful. Northern Ireland is politically part of the United Kingdom, but economically is part of the European Union, which is to say, it would be like Indiana deciding that they were going to remain as part of the United States, but from an economic point of view, they're going to be part of Canada. And anytime, you know, someone in Illinois wanted to send, you know, product to Michigan, they would effectively have to go through a third country, now Canada, although in the shape of Indiana, in order to get it to another area within the United States. And all, if you could imagine all the customs requirements and all that kind of stuff that would happen if that were to occur, you can understand why Northern Ireland is kind of a very unusual situation. It's very rare that it's easier to send goods to a different political entity than it is within your own political entity, but that's what we have in Northern Ireland. And that is something that just, you know, this is a, they tried to square a circle and you can't do it. And the implications for that, for the British government, are quite significant in that there are economic implications, but they're also political. And those political ones have also economic ramifications. So, you know, if things get bad in Northern Ireland, and the UK unilaterally decides to dump the Northern Ireland Protocol, then the EU will likely retaliate. If they do, you are probably going to see economic conditions in Northern Ireland deteriorate, and that may lead to the renewal of political violence and a breaking of this idea, this Good Friday Agreement, which has been in existence now for nearly 30 years. If that happens, then not only will the UK as a whole be destabilized, but it also makes it much more difficult for the British government to do trade deals, for example, with the Americans, because certainly the current Biden administration has said that they are watching what the UK does in terms of the Good Friday Agreement, and that will dictate how and at what speed a trade agreement would go through between the US and the UK. So there are real consequences for the UK here.
Yeah, and you know, on we've been talking a lot about the goods issues, the empty store shelves in some places. You talked about the sausages, but there's also still a lingering question about financial services. And the question being, you know, will financial services in the UK still be able to access the European Union's single market? Have any of those questions been answered yet?
No, they haven't, and they are unlikely to be. So the situation is pretty straightforward in many respects. Within the European Union, if you are a financial institution that operates and is licensed in any member state, you can operate in all member states. So it would be kind of like, you know, for example, Citibank can operate in multiple states in the United States. Deutsche Bank can operate in multiple member state countries within the European Union. The situation for the UK now is because they're a third country, they don't have that right, that kind of passporting right, which is the thing that allows people to operate anywhere within the across all member states. They've lost that. So now they fall under the equivalency. So the European Union says that if you want to operate a financial institution in our jurisdiction, we want you to have the same level of controls and transparency and regulatory oversight that EU financial institutions have. And the EU decides whether you do or not. So, you know, there was the Chancellor of the Exchequer in the UK made a big speech there last month, and he was saying that, you know, our regulations are going to be better, as good if not better than the EU, and they won't be able to turn us down. Well, you know, the thing is that it's not up to Rishi Sunak whether the EU accepts the UK regulations. It's up to the EU. And they have no incentive to do so. So I think from that kind of, that aspect of the London financial markets, that's going to be very difficult. And that's where the real money is. So, you know, being able to underwrite German government bonds or French government bonds and, you know, to be able to engage in all kinds of activities within the European Union across member states is very valuable. And that's where banks in London historically have made a huge amount of money. Mm-hmm. That's going to be kind of closed off for them. Now, what may exist for them would be around the kind of ancillary stuff around the edges. So in terms of like financial technology or legal aspects or accounting aspects, you might see companies remain within London. But for a lot of the real kind of prime activities, people are leaving and they've left. You know, as we talked about before, you know, December 28th, you know, the London market did about 98% of all of the trading in European Union equities. You know, on January 3rd, Amsterdam did 98%.
Wow.
You know, it's just like a light switch.
Yeah, and I was going to say that in the future, too, you know, you have to think that some of these people that are in these financial services sector, the idea of sitting down to do future deals is probably not something that they are looking forward to or even maybe planning.
Yeah, well, you know, it's people like certainty. Even if they don't like what the certainty is, they like certainty. And now they have, you know, a huge amount of uncertainty. And that means that, you know, obviously, you know, deals that were done, you know, will probably continue unless there's a way of, you know, scaling them back or getting out of it. But the ability for the UK to attract new deals is going to be, I think, impacted pretty dramatically. And also, you know, people are going to vote with their feet. You know, a lot of the people that worked in London in the financial services area in London were from somewhere else. And a lot of them were from continental Europe. And, you know, these people will go back. So you not only do you lose, you know, the businesses lose their ability to conduct business, they lay off staff, that staff leaves and goes back maybe to another center in Europe, they're not going to come back. So if you're trying to revitalize the sector, you don't have the people to do it. And, you know, you also face the fact that for a lot of the stuff that the UK can do, there are other low-cost areas that can also do it. So, you know, are they in a race to the bottom, which is what a lot of the kind of anti-Brexit people said from the very beginning. you know, that they were afraid of, that Britain would end up in this kind of global race to the bottom, and the impact that would have on society generally.
David, great conversation as always. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Well, the desk number is 866-524-8836. And the my email address, of course, is david.faller, so it's david.faller @associatedbank.com.
Great chatting with you as always. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Steve.